Okay, it is 9 o'clock, February 4th, 2020. It's a Tuesday. We are in the Josephine County Board of Commissioners Conference Room. All commissioners are present. The first item on the agenda is an airport's quarterly update with Larry Graves, our airport director. Please, come on up. Bring any entourage you may have brought.
Matthew Taylor from Kauffman and Corley McFarland from Precision Approach Engineering to come up with me and have a seat.
Okay.
And I thought that it would be appropriate for Patrick to begin a short presentation, so like a dozen slides or so, and to kind of walk you through the process that we undertook to get to this point and where we're going from here.
Happy to do that. Hello, everyone.
Morning.
I am Patrick Taylor, so I'm with Kauffman Associates. We're a national airport planning firm. And Corley is on our team as well. Corley, of course, is with Precision Approach and has done a lot of engineering work out at the airport and has complemented our planning team very well for this process. So we were selected to do the master plan. This is not quite working.
Thank you. Slide B.
Are you able to advance it over there?
I see. Is it on?
Good question.
Oh, it has an on-off switch on the remote, huh?
It is it's on.
Yeah. Changing the slide.
Same. Maybe hit page up, page down, or something like that. There we go.
Okay. So, I've only got about a dozen slides here, but as Larry mentioned, the process has been ongoing for about a year and a half. And there's a lot of technical detail that's in the draft final right now. I believe each of you received a copy of the draft final as well as a summary report. But a master plan is primarily an FAA-prescribed process. You know, they fund the plan at about 90%, and Oregon Department of Aviation chips in another 5%. So the purpose of it is to develop a plan going forward based on justified or anticipated needs of the airport over the course of about 20 years. So that's what we've done. We've taken a 20-year look at the airport and put together a program that much of which has been reviewed by the FAA at this point already. And so that's what we're here to present to you. And this is working, right? Yes.
I don't know. It was kind of... Okay. We can just...
Here we go.
There you go.
I think we're starting to move now. Okay, so on the left here, this is kind of the process and the flow of the project. On the left, the red dots, it says PAC number one. We had, Larry had assembled a planning advisory committee, so a group of airport stakeholders to whom we presented at various milestones. You can see each of those bubbles in the middle represents a chapter of the master plan, and it follows that FAA process. So there were four different PAC meetings with that group of stakeholders, and at three points along the way, after the PAC meeting, we had an advertised public information workshop where we kind of cleared out all the chairs and put up display boards and invited the public to come in and comment on the progress of the plan to date. And so all of those comments that we've received from the committee, from the public, of course from FAA and our team have been incorporated at this point into the draft final. So this is largely complete. This is probably 98% complete. We still have an opportunity to make any minor changes, like the logo, which we will change for the final, so that will all be nice and crisp.
That'd get us closer, wouldn't it, Commissioner?
I think so.
Okay, thank you.
So you can see our first kickoff meeting was in October of 18. We followed that a couple of months later with our inventory of forecasts. So we're forecasting aviation activity 20 years into the future, and the FAA reviews and approves that specifically before we can move forward into identifying needs.
That's important to keep in mind that there's an iterative process. So as we complete the draft versions of Chapter 1, 2, 3, we send those to the FAA, to our interface up there in the planning division, and they approve so far what we've done, and that way we're not wasting time going down a path that they're not going to approve in the future kind of thing. So it's an important give and take kind of thing.
How far do you take that out? Do you have a 20 years out, you could have flying cars?
Well, that's the thing. So the forecasts are pretty rich for about the first 5 to 7 years, but they do age and degrade, and the aviation industry is notorious for stark changes. So economic recession can change everything, as it did in 08. I mean, just the introduction of jets, passenger jets in the 50s, just changed everything. So that is a possibility. The FAA wants airports to kind of update them every, at least GA, general aviation airports, about every 7 to 10 years to address those things. And that's one of the reasons why this plan was done in the first place, is Larry was identifying a need for a runway extension. The FAA is like, we need to see the justification. Larry felt it was there. So the FAA said, well, I tell you what, if it's there, let's do the plan now, and then we can step forward through that process. And we've identified
that. Because our other plan was only 8 years old or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we usually do them every 20?
Well, the big change was, frankly, the Dutch Bros operation, and then a couple of your FBOs started bringing on charter jet activity. I mean, that's a big change for an airport like this.
That was a sea change, because their businesses were improving and growing and expanding so rapidly that they needed the bigger, faster aircraft, and now we need the
runway. The part of this is the FAA say, I want to see Dutch Brothers business plan. I want to see their master plan for 20 years, and I want to see Pacific Aviation plan.
They have asked for that.
Because, you know, if we're hinging that on Dutch Brothers increasing at Pacific Aviation and Chief Aircraft and all of that, all of our people out there, they want to know that those plans are solid, too, going forward, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we've provided the FAA with letters signed by the CEOs of those companies, Dutch Bros, Travis, and their chief operating officer, Christine. She signed the letter. Dave Traeger from Pacific Aviation, PacJet, they've all signed letters to me. They've addressed me. Hey, we need this. And I've transmitted those up to the FAA.
And those are in here.
Yeah.
Also. So they are all supporting various projects that we've identified in the plan.
One of the appendices, yeah.
So on that note, just as a reminder, I leave the 26th and meet with DeFazio the 27th.
Oh, good. Okay. And I have an update in that regard as well.
Okay. So let's talk soon.
Very good.
So after the forecasts are approved by the FAA, we start applying our various models for facility needs. So how much hangar space do we need? How much runway do we need? How many taxiways? All kinds of things that an airport needs over time. And then we develop the airport alternatives. So this identifies where future facilities might go. It also identifies future design standard changes, which can happen at an airport. As larger planes begin to use an airport to a certain threshold, then the safety considerations become longer, wider, more restrictive anyway for an airport. So we've gone through that process. And then out the other end comes a recommended development concept that's presented to the committee and to the public. It's refined quite a bit in consultation with those stakeholders and the FAA. And then we get to a point down there at the bottom where we have an airport layout plan. So this is the second piece that the FAA requires. The first was the forecast. The second piece is a set of technical drawings of the airport that shows the condition today and the planned future condition. And so actually what we're requesting here today is approval or adoption of the master plan, but direction to us to submit that airport layout plan to the FAA for their technical review. That is the last process in the plan.
And that's the big engineering drawing that, and we'll probably see a copy of it here, but it's the one I have on the wall in the office that shows, from an engineering standpoint, all the features that are on the ground at the airport, and then all the stuff in dotted lines, which we, as Patrick said,
that
plan
right
to
there.
Have in the future.
So it's just a set of technical drawings.
That's from the tin here?
So that's a graphic presentation of this.
So, yeah.
So that's more design.
Short story.
Yep.
Okay. Is water hookup and sewer and other stuff like that all a part of the master plan?
We talk about it in the master plan. I have dragged it into the discussion to make sure that it is taken care of in the future planning. The next thing I think that is reasonably likely to happen at the airport is to bring in city water so that we can have fire hydrants all down the length of that.
We're working on that.
Yep.
So from a master plan.
But if it's not in a master plan, can it happen?
No, it's not that. It's that the master plan is really directed for capital projects that the FAA can participate in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're limited from that perspective, from a scope perspective, how far we can go into those pieces.
Yeah.
What we have identified, though, particularly on that project, is we think there's some connectivity between extension of water and sewer to actual airport activity, mm-hmm. particularly at the terminal building, mm-hmm. which may justify a portion of it being eligible for FAA funding. So that's kind of where that's really what this is presenting a case for each project and an estimated funding level. We have done that for that particular project.
Is there any natural barriers in the way of this? I know Roseburg just went through a deal for their approach, and they cut off the top of a mountain, somebody told me, and moved a tower and spent quite a bit of money just getting a decent approach to dropping into that valley at Douglas County. Do we don't have any of that here, do we?
We don't have any mountains in the way, but we do have a lot of trees, and so we did some lumberjacking. We brought in Siskiyou Cascade, and they probably harvested 20,000 trees on our approach end of runway 13, and reduced their invoice to us by the value of the wholesale value of the merchantable lumber. Yeah. And those were identified obstacles in invading the airspace, and so we've just removed them, took them down to the ground. So that is a natural barricade. And
been removed, so we've satisfied that.
Yes, well, they'll continue to grow. There's others out there, so yeah.
Ain't nothing prettier than a clear cut.
Careful now.
Yeah.
There are specific drawings in the airport layout plan set that address that. So there's certain slopes depending on your instrument approach capability.
That's what I mean. We don't have a mountain. We're not trying to drop in like you do at Paradise Lodge down on the Rogue River, where you're up here and the next minute you're in the guy's backyard and you're coasting along on the lawn.
Actually is a good question. You're spot on, because I've heard a lot of complaints about our mountain being an issue with our approach. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned one day that there's another community that they skimmed the top of a mountain so they could have an easier approach. So do we have to look at something like that?
Well, that's what I was asking the question, if there's any natural stuff.
We do look at that. Patrick has looked at that. And
exactly. So we've tried... So the lower your visibility minimums for a pilot, the more accessible your airport is. Kind of a standard visibility minimum is about a mile. So if you have that, that's good. If you can get below that, down to even 3/4, or in some cases a 1/2 mile, which is the lowest that Medford has, for example, then that's really good. So for out here, we've identified the possibility of 7/8 of a mile on the left end of that picture. So that would be the extension end, and then a mile on the other end. There are other factors, not just hills or trees, but the design standards of the airport itself that limit that. But nonetheless, 7/8 of a mile for this airport would be extremely, really good. That'd be something you can hang your hat on.
That's questionable. This puts us within the realm of that's going to work.
Very competitive general aviation airport.
So do we have to clear out all those trees?
No.
They're gone.
That's already gone? Okay.
And you wouldn't have to anyway. That shape, that trapezoid shape, is the runway protection zone, and you're allowed to have trees in it. They just can't be to a certain elevation.
I, for some reason, think trees are not necessarily protecting, but, you know.
Right. No, they're not. They're not, but but they can be in there.
They might slow down travel, but no.
Well, proceed here. So I mentioned the forecasts, and these are the aviation demand forecasts that were submitted to the FAA and approved, and I'll just summarize. In our base year, there were about 43,000 annual operations, an operation being a plane landing is one, and a plane taking off is one. And we show moderate growth, about 1.6% annually, up to about 60,000 annual operations. So that's pretty normal projected growth. There's about 158 confirmed based aircraft at the airport now. We show that growing over the next 20 years to about 217. Just so you know, that is kind of bucking the national trend, where the number of planes in the number of general aviation aircraft in the national fleet is either flat or declining in certain segments. So we see this as a growth airport, not a stagnant airport. Various activity during the day and the hour that helps us to forecast facility needs. So those were approved by the FAA. The other part of the forecast is what we call the critical aircraft. And this is an important concept I'd like to try and convey to you, because this is what Larry is talking about with the FAA extensively now because it relates directly to the potential extension of the runway. So the runway is about 4,000 feet right now. The way you get FAA participation in a major project, you know, a $10 million project like extending the runway, is to have adequate justification. And justification is at least 500 annual operations by the planes that need it. So where you see that B2 planes, the one on the top is in that particular picture is a King Air, and that is approximately the critical aircraft today, so like a twin turboprop aircraft. But it's transitioning as we speak to that second B2, which is those that are over 12,500 pounds. That transition is happening because Dutch Bros has already brought in a plane that looks much like that, a Citation IV business jet. They've got plans to bring in others. Both of those are going to replace the turboprops that Dutch Bros has now. And that transition, once they hit 500 operations by that CJ4, new design standards, wider, longer design standards to protect the runway apply. That also affects the required or recommended runway length for those planes, affects taxiway width, and a number of other safety standards. So it leads directly to project justification.
We've all said chicken or the egg. I mean, you know, they say, oh, well, you got to have all those aircraft taken off and landed 500 times. And the guy comes around and goes, that's too short a runway for me to do this safely. So I'm going to Medford. I'm not going to risk all my plane, first off, and everybody on board, just so we can rack up takeoffs and landings by a certain aircraft. Does anybody up the channel think of that?
There is.
Sometimes you wonder.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, in this case, you've got to have the extended runway first. You really do.
Yeah.
Because not only the operators look at that and say, well, that's not really safe. I don't want to take a fully loaded airplane with all the seats filled and try to take off on a hot day from that short runway, or try to take off if the runway is wet, because my jet doesn't have thrust reversers and I have to rely on my tires, and if it's wet, I don't have any friction. So there's all kinds of things. Not only that, but the insurance companies, they dictate what you can and cannot do with the airplane that they feel like they own, because they have to pay for it if you mess it up, okay? So there are certain standards that jet operators have to, the airports they use have to meet.
Now, would the insurance company, for instance, if they had a recommendation, don't land there, and you did anyway, and you wrecked the plane, can the insurance company say, hey, you're in violation, we're not paying for that, you were...
If you agree to those terms in that contract, you can have a car.
And they'll insure it on the specialty auto insurance. You wreck it at White City at the end of the quarter mile, all bets are off, because they put that stipulation. You're not going to go drag racing in that car.
So you might ask yourself, well, how are they using this airport with these expensive jets that don't meet standards?
Half a tank of gas.
That's right. That's right. They literally, and here's what Dutch Bros does every single day. They put 10 people in the seats. They have an hour and a half's worth of fuel on board, and they could actually have 8 hours of fuel on board, but they don't. And they take off and they fly to Medford. 10-minute flight. They take off, they fly a big circle, they land at Medford, and they pull up, and they fill up at Medford because they've got an 8,800-foot long runway, and they can take off.
And then turn and go north, perhaps.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not what their business plan calls for long term.
I'm looking at the, seeing how we're looking at the environment. I'm looking at the environmental effect.
Sure.
So you got to take off and land, and you're putting a lot more horsepower to that thing trying to get it off the ground again, other than keeping it in the air.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you burn the most fuel that you can burn when you're at low altitude in a jet.
And Tesla's working on an electric airplane. It looks good and everything, but it's so heavy it can't get off the ground. Just kidding.
Maybe just to add on to that, you asked about the chicken and the egg, the 500 ops. You're actually kind of in a fortunate position, because a 4,000-foot runway, that CJ4 can work here under limited circumstances, and you can get to 500 ops. You probably will this year. The FAA does have the option to look into the future of the next 5 years of anticipated activity, But to date, they have not accepted that as justification for the runway extension. They want the 500 number, period. That's the battle that Larry's been fighting.
But couldn't you make the case that the King Air 350 is going to replace the King Air 200, and the King Air 200 makes 500?
That's what we're doing.
Already
exactly
does
what
make
we're,
500.
That's exactly what we're doing.
And we're not going to have that 200 anymore. We're going to keep it in the back of the hangar, but we're going to utilize that 350 to do everything that the 500 did, the 200 used
That's
to
right.
do. So it's going to get at least 500 or more.
The FAA has asked me to prove that. And so I have sent them copies of the Conquest sale ads in, you know, Trade a Plane and all these different, you know, here we're selling this airplane and we're replacing it with a jet. So they buy the jet, they park the plane, it's for sale. I had to prove that it's being actively marketed to the FAA, which is, you know, I mean, it's off the books. It's crazy, yeah, to have to go to those lengths. But I'm trying to remove every single objection that they have. They have written policy and guidelines that say you can take a letter from a CEO of a company that states, hey, we bought this jet. We're going to use it 500 times a year. We need a longer runway. And that justifies a longer runway all by itself. We've done that three times over. We've done all this stuff, and they keep running around moving the goalposts on us, you know. So
he's still fighting the good fight, though.
Yeah.
The picture of you and Corley with the Ouija board wasn't enough for him to justify.
I'm about to go there.
We're going to go there. 500? Whoa, 650!
Well, I think you all are understanding kind of the big concept that's emerged from this plan is that we've got all these Conquest aircraft. There's four of them out there now. That represents your current critical aircraft, and that justifies a runway length of 4,400 feet. There's 4,000 feet out there right now. The transition that's happening today and may occur by March or June even, as frequently as they're operating, is to that CJ-4.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to justify the longer runway length of up to 5,500 feet.
You guys need to get out to the hangar and take a look at that if you haven't been out there. It's pretty neat. And the first week it was here, made four flights a day.
Wow. The bottom dead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
CJ-4?
Yeah, yeah. 992 Delta Bravo, DB for Dutch Bros. Yeah.
Is it 99? It says 92.
992.
Two nines? Mm-hmm. I had it wrong.
Okay. Right. Well, they started the company in 1992, so that's why.
Why I thought it was just 92. Okay. N92.
N.
There we go. Okay. I was mishearing. So this is the FAA's calculation of justified runway length at this airport now. It's 4,400 feet. They buy into that. They see that as a viable short-term project to add 400 feet to this runway. What the master plan is showing and what all evidence is showing is that really, very soon, we should have justification for a runway length of up to 5,500 feet.
Why waste the money if we're not?
Well, that's the conversations that's going on right now. The next step after this master plan is an environmental assessment for the areas that would be impacted by an extension. And the FAA has agreed to do that for the 400-foot extension. Okay. What we're trying to get done is to agree to do the longer extension knowing that in a matter of months, the actual justification will be there. And Larry is running into a wall on that. So we've been forced in the master plan to actually put together a program that phases the runway extension over two different projects. But we've done it in such a way that once Larry gets through this roadblock at the FAA, they can be combined and that project can be launched as one single project. So we've built in some flexibility for you all to, if you can get through the FAA roadblocks, to move forward with the larger, actually justified project.
Yeah, it's probably appropriate at this time to mention that in working with Molly McCarthy from Senator Wyden's office and Amy Amrine from Senator Merkley's office, they have contacted Joel Briggs, who's the head of the airport's district office for the FAA in Seattle, and have requested her presence at a meeting on Monday morning, February 10th, in Salem, in Senator Wyden's office in Salem. And so she will be there. I will be there. Corley will be there. And probably the head of the Northwest region for the FAA, who is Joel's boss, he's been invited to attend. And, of course, we have Ed McGlone, the chief of staff for Peter DeFazio's office, and Caitlin Pei, who's chief of staff, or a field staffer for Representative Walden, and they're all calling the FAA about this. And so we've been focusing a lot of attention on this issue for about 2 months now, and we're getting a little bit of movement from the FAA. They've agreed to sit down and talk to us about this issue.
So one thing that comes to mind is that the Secretary of Transportation has been a friend of NACO, spoke at a NACO conference a year or two ago, and there's probably a nexus of one of the Oregon commissioners having access to get in there. So if we need to try to get an appointment with FAA's boss, let me know if you want that.
And is that the National Association of County Organizations?
Correct.
Okay.
But I mean, if the Secretary of Transportation came and spoke my first time in D.C., because NACO invited, I mean, they've had a couple big speakers and stuff like that, and it might be worth trying to see about
That's
getting
great.
An appointment if you think that would be helpful, not just taking from the Congress route, but taking from the Secretary's route, too.
The executive branch, yeah.
Well, and for that meeting, I might suggest you bring some of those boxes of Dutch Bros coffee. Back up your claim.
This was just delivered by their jet.
There you go.
10 minutes ago, piping hot.
So with that kind of introductory discussion, this is a graphic illustration of the 20-year master plan program. So this does not have individual annual phasing, but let me just orient you a little bit. So everything in red is new pavement. So it's either taxiways or runways or aircraft parking apron. Everything in yellow is a new aviation structure, like a hangar, so hangar facilities. And blue is any roads or parking. And so the
ground vehicles, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So the areas down in orange there are all just what we've termed aviation reserve. So that's area that we're reserving for future aviation needs beyond the 20-year time frame.
Is the presence of Southern Oregon Air Academy as an educational element, does that play into this? Did we throw that in there somewhere of what we figure the Aviation Academy will be in 20 years?
Didn't talk about the growth of the Academy. We talked about its presence and its importance to the community on the airport, and it's actually identified on the airport.
We have a long-term lease with them, I believe.
Yep, they'll be there.
And so that, you know, I mean, they're a long-term tenant. It's not just, oh, yeah, they're out there for a couple, they rent for a couple of months for a summer camp. This is a long-term.
Yeah, part of my vision for this is once we have the runway extended and all the red pavement in place, it will be a relatively simple matter to pave a taxi lane to the Southern Oregon Air Academy, and they can actually have, that will give them what we call runway access for their plane build program, which they're going to be starting shortly,
right.
That kind of thing. So as it is now, they'll just put it all together, pull the wings off, put it on a trailer, and truck it around to the middle of the airport in order to gain access. And that's something that can happen, but it would just be incredible for their growth and their impact on the community if they actually had viable programs and high school kids building planes and learning how to fly and having access to the runway from their facility. So that's
they can learn to drive on the access.
And what's the length at Ivy Airport?
Ivy Airport is 5,000 feet. It's 1,000 feet longer than what we have today at Grants Pass Airport.
But we don't have fuel. Mm-hmm. So that's the issue at Ivy.
We have a fuel truck that's parked at the airport. So there's...
We just got low lead out there again.
Again, yeah. We lost our truck for a while, but yeah.
Because the pump was out, the truck didn't work.
But we need jet fuel out there in order to encourage turboprop.
I mean, if just something to keep in mind as we're going here for this expansion, that we have a second industrial park potential out here.
Mm-hmm. We're about to apply for a $4.2 million project probably in March. That application will be going to the FAA in March for a construction project that will begin this summer. $4.2 million construction project, revamping that runway completely.
And that has to be, they have to have all bids in by April something, isn't
April 1st.
And then they let it by April 11th or something, pretty fast.
They'll probably have the awards, the grant awards, in our hands in the June time frame. I'm guessing that's their internal goal. So,
do you have the match prepared for that?
I'm working on it. I did make a presentation, as you're aware, to the Joint City County Economic Development Committee, who they passed a resolution promising to pester the City of Grants Pass and you three commissioners for economic development money to act during the next, 5-year period.
I went to that meeting yesterday, and they said the city was fairly receptive. It wasn't an immediate, no way.
Yeah, good.
The commission has also shown a real receptiveness to that.
So we anticipate, I'll learn this on February 11th in Salem. The State Aviation Board is meeting, and they're going to be announcing the awards of this current cycle of core grant funding from the state. Their highest priority is to provide match money for federal construction projects like this. And we have applied for the maximum amount available in any current year, which is $150,000. We're going to have a $400,000 match requirement here. So we'll probably get the $150,000 from the state to help us with that. And then I need to come up with another $250,000 or so. And, $250,000 out-of-pocket cost for a $4.2 million project is not a bad investment in our future.
Yeah.
On top of that, we also have $4.2 million worth of asphalt. That really helps out the local economy. That's one of the things that all of these grants and projects, construction projects, come about. There's an element of, how is Southern Oregon doing, and would this help in their employment opportunity in the local economy? And of course, we see Illinois Valley, the poorest community in just south of Alabama, and so that weighs heavy out there also. So that's another thing they look at. That.
I don't want to be south of Alabama.
What?
Sounds a little wet.
Yeah, it's pretty wet south of Alabama.
South of Alabama?
Well, it's called the Caribbean.
You can get through all the oil from the BP oil spill. But anyway, I think that that's one of the elements that they would take into consideration on that project out there. So, and then along with the recap of the runway out there, there's some turnaround elements and some run-up areas that are now not legal. At that airport, those are going to all be corrected at the same time. So we had a very hearty discussion at the meeting the other night. It was a very robust discussion about which side of the runway the turnaround could be and how much room it takes to turn one person's jet around. And I think we were back to probably doing it the way that you all put forth, and then if you want to do anything different than that, that's the private sector. Because we could go put that turnaround in, they go, well, no, we decided that we want to go on the other side. And you'd be chasing that tail forever. So I think
we
provide what you have on the list, and then if they want something different.
The design will already be done, and the environmental vetting and everything else. So
we can't go in there right now at the 11th hour plus 30 seconds and turn that around.
Yeah, we are happy, though, with that in mind, to pursue that further. I mean, the advisory board kind of asked the question, and I've got no problem and was planning to pick it up with FAA.
Right.
We're not going to derail the project.
And I don't think on the turnaround, on the warm-up run-up area, that we had an actual footage as to what that was.
Correct.
We thought it was 100, but maybe it was 120. Yeah. I'd like to get that. If it needs to be 125 by 125, I don't think that's a big change.
Yeah, so we have updated that. I don't want to get too far off track here with the master plan. We have updated that to the 125 feet recommended by the advisory board. And then just kind of in the interest of, pursuing what the advisory board said, I'm going to ask those questions of FAA and just see what they respond back to. So I'll keep you posted.
But at this stage of the game, we don't want to throw anything in the fire that's going to be a deal breaker.
That's very important
right
now.
Yeah.
It's crunch time.
Back to Grants Pass. Another requirement of the master plan is to identify land uses on the airport. So this is an FAA technical drawing, but we've kind of freed it up here so that you all kind of get a visual understanding of that. So the blue area is essentially the runway taxiway system. Everything in purple is an aviation reserve. So essentially everything along the parallels of the taxiways should be reserved for aviation uses only. There's quite a bit of land that's not kind of right up against the runway and taxiway system. So everything in orange we've identified for any other kind of compatible airport use. So this is an opportunity to use land that is part of the airport to generate revenue for the airport. And the Southern Oregon Air Academy, J down there, is identified that way. And that's important from an FAA's perspective because they start from the attitude that all airport land is for aviation uses only unless you have some justification for it not to be. And we have that here.
Now this is thinking, I'm just going to ask the question. Down there in J, part of the Southern Oregon Air Academy, I think they're going to have a drone program type thing in there. Can they essentially clear some land around there and have their own little drone thing without it getting into the airspace for the airport?
Well, there are considerations. Yeah, and right now the FAA's, well, the FAA's blanket rules are that no drones fly within 5 statute miles of an airport runway.
Oh, wow.
Right. And so the River Road Reserve was 5 miles away from the runway, and that's why they wanted that area for the drone operations. However, I've got one of the largest retailers of drones in the country whose headquarters is on Grants Pass Airport, and that's Chief Aircraft. Right now, they're about 40% of their gross is from selling radio-controlled aircraft, large-scale drones, et cetera. So they're constantly asking me for permission to fly their drones as part of their, you know, we're not selling this yet, we're evaluating it for sale, that kind of thing. So I have a written protocol in place that people who want to operate a drone within 5 miles of the airport can do so, but only under certain very strict circumstances. And that's been in place now for 2 years, and it works really well.
But this was an issue out in... We had the cops called on drones out of the IV airport. It kept people from landing for a while.
I didn't know that. No one's told me that anyone called the cops. But every time a drone has been flying out there with my permission and my foreknowledge, there hasn't been a conflict.
Apparently this was just somebody pulled along.
Well, Jason Davis, our ops manager, found a drone lying on the runway. A large one. Pretty good-sized drone. And it turned
did
out
it sell
that
on eBay?
Yeah, it belonged to a high school kid or a junior high school kid who was just out flying it and lost line of sight on it, and it just, you know, fluttered down to a landing right on the runway. So that is a problem. That is a problem. And I'm not sure what the solution is other than you know, build an iron dome of RF, you know, whatever around the runway. But then people who use the radios in their aircraft are going to have a problem with that. So we're working it out on a national level.
Maybe some target hunting for the Rifle Association or something?
Well, you know, the FAA has something to say about shooting down an aircraft.
So this is probably the exhibit most folks will refer to for the next many years. This is the phasing exhibit, and it shows short-term projects in yellow, which is years 1 through 5, essentially, an intermediate-term phase, years 6 through 10, and then a long-term, the green, years 11 through 20.
This represents a compromise with the FAA. We were told you can't show the full-length extension in yellow. You cannot show that in the next 5 years. It's not justified. That's their current position. So we're not admitting that this is the way it's going to be. But what Patrick has worked out, which I think is wonderfully creative, is that, okay, we will show it as a follow-on project to be done in years 6 through 11 or 6 through 10.
But if the five-year barrier comes down, you can just quickly change that to all yellow, and we're already...
That's right.
You do the environmental assessment because you've got paperwork in place to say, we want to do the whole environmental assessment with the 400 feet.
We want to do it with the 1,500 feet.
With 1,500 feet, right. But you want to do it along in conjunction with the 400 feet and extend it out to 1,500 feet. So that's already done.
Right. So that it doesn't become
a barricade. Does that have a shelf life?
So, well, it does.
It does, 3 to 5 years. Yeah. But if the project doesn't change, then the shelf life is longer.
Okay.
And here's one other feature. Now, typically when dealing with the FAA, if you threaten them with a safety issue, that motivates them. That gets their juices flowing. But that's not a great way to do business, okay? So the other thing is that I come from the private sector. This, as I've said before, this is my first government job here working for Josephine County. From a business standpoint and an economic standpoint, you can do the yellow runway extension, 400-foot extension of the runway and the taxiways, and that's going to cost $7.5 million as a standalone project. And that includes the environmental assessment for the 400-foot extension, okay? That would be phase two, and then the actual physical construction would I'd call phase three. You can do the whole 1,500-foot extension for $10 million from day one. But if you break it up into two separate projects like the FAA is insisting today, you're going to spend $7.5 million to do the 400, and then 10 years from now, if you have the justification, you'll do another environmental for $500,000 or more, and then the construction of the 1,100-foot remainder, that's going to cost you $10 million all by itself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just crazy to think about breaking it up into two separate phases. It really needs to be done now.
Commissioner DeYoung?
I'm seeing the 6 to 10 as more than just the runway extension. I'm seeing the 6 to 10 back in all the hangar areas and all the orange and across on the other side of the runway. So have you split that out and said just the runway? We're not interested in items 2, 3, 3A, 4, 4A, all that, and all that pavement rehabilitation and stuff. Thank you.
There it all is.
So these are all the numbers. These are the projects, particularly in the short term, that are on the current airport capital improvement program with the FAA. So we're looking at doing the environmental assessment for an extension. We don't know whether it's going to be the 400-foot or 1,500-foot, but an extension in fiscal 2021. It takes 2 years to do the EA, so by 2023 we're looking at design of a 400-foot extension for the runway, taxiways, and then 2024 we build it. The very first project of the intermediate term, so year six, if this goes, is the remaining extension. That's where we've broken it up, where Coralie's worked on all the estimates. If we get the go, we can combine them together into one single project.
And all the sub-costs that you were talking about for the unrelated to the runway length, those are all listed here. There's Project 2, 3, 3A, 4, et cetera.
But if I were to say, I just want that runway long, I'll break it off as a phase three, doing all of three down. You know, that you need the apron construction and such and such, and a runway extension to 1,100 feet. Now you're at $6.4 million instead of...
Oh, no, the $10 million is just the runway and taxiways. It didn't count any of this other stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, there's the waterline extension to the airport. Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to get down to $6 million for that 1,100 remainder. I mean, if they do that separately, that's going to be a $10 million project.
And so, yeah.
The $10 million takes in, well, $13 million takes in 1 through 10.
Correct.
That's taxi lane extension, the triangle area, and flaming road extensions, and taxi lanes, and pavement rehabilitation. Through all of that, all of this in orange is tacked on to that, when that right there is what we really should be covering.
Well, they're not. They're all separate projects.
Okay.
Yeah,
Each of them would be a different grant.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not all or nothing.
I think the other thing to remember, we kind of talked a lot about costs, but the costs that you see in here that Patrick's showing, those are all in 2019 dollars. Right. So they'll continue to accelerate as time goes by. When we talk about project costs, we tend to forecast those forward for construction escalation. Okay. So when you get there, you have enough money.
I was just going to ask, this isn't today's dollars. This is 5 years in the future dollars.
These are today's dollars.
These are today's dollars.
The $10.5 million, the $7.5 million, the real numbers that we talk about, those are the cost for the year of
what it would cost if they didn't do it until. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, yes, there needs to be some kind of a factor. The master plan talks about consumer price index, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you know, it's just kind of the standard in a master plan to do it at a specific year that you're doing it. Just because these things are super fluid. Even the short-term one, I wouldn't doubt if some of these get moved around. And we want them to be moved around, right? We want the short, the intermediate term project to come into here. So just so everybody's on the same brain page in terms of cost, it helps to just have a flat number. But well, keep in mind.
Yeah, but as we talk with FAA and as we budget for projects, I mean, we are accounting for actual construction
costs. As you always know, if there's anything we can do, we'll do it. Because we want this thing to happen here. That's for darn sure. And we want it to happen in a reasonable, comprehensive way that makes the most sense with taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
They're always harping at you about make sure you spend taxpayer dollars wisely. And then the powers that be pull something like this and go, that's not wise. No wisdom in that at all.
Yeah.
Well, just to summarize, the numbers are always fluid, but we feel like we've identified a solid 20-year plan of attack in terms of projects that should be eligible for FAA funding. Just the bottom line is there's about $28 million of projects that we've identified over the next 20 years, the vast majority of which is eligible for FAA funding and ODA grant match. The local responsibility is about $5 million. A portion of that, about half of it, is in a replacement terminal building, which is not eligible for FAA funding. Mm. So without that, then we're at about $2.5 million over 20 years that would be the responsibility for the local match.
Okay, that's a little more. I was like $5 million at once. I'm like, well, that might be harder, but over 20 years, or what portion per year? I mean, can it be broken down over 20 years?
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And by project.
Yeah. It's by project, because you're going to... The cost to the county is a match.
Because that's about $260,000 a year.
That's exactly what I've been asking for.
To do the whole program.
Yeah. Yeah. And remember, the stuff in yellow is a 400-foot extension. So that need will go up if we get the full 1,500-foot extension.
Oh, in the first term, so to speak.
Yeah. So you would basically add... The $6 million and the $13 million together. Well, actually, the $13 million would be a smaller number if it happens
sure,
now.
Sure, take out five of it.
Yeah. So, anyway, how are we doing on time?
And I asked
9:47.
Okay.
The question, and I think I already got the answer. This doesn't have to be. This can be a public-private partnership. If we got a partner from the private sector and said, "Yeah, I'll take that $250 million. I'll take that on."
Sure.
To get the whole thing, that would just wipe it all out and we'd be all set to go. We could do a public-private partnership, an endowment or whatever for that amount of money for the next 20 years rather than saying, well, it's all on the back of the taxpayer. Then it is all taken care of and it marches forward and go from there. And
it makes a lot of sense to sit down and have a business case discussion with the private entities here in Josephine County. But I have been waiting to do that until we have an absolute yes, no, whatever. So we need to know what the FAA is willing to do before we can go.
Exactly. Before we go, but I think that the question I ask is can that be a public-private partnership? And the answer I got was yes. I think you told me yes. Mm-hmm. We've all said yes.
You can invest in your own
airport. That's, we always hate to ask, but, sometimes you go ask your uncle for $500 and he goes, well, let's just borrow $1,000. You're not going to pay it back anyway. So,
I want your uncle.
I think, okay, all right. Yeah. That puts it in more realistic terms. I think it costs more than $250,000 a year. And
you can make the case to a private business that it's in their best interest.
I know of events around here that could do that. That their bottom line would absorb that without any problem.
Yep.
So that's what I'm thinking. You put that into that perspective, how important this whole project is over the next 20 years. Holy cow, that's a really small investment on the local side. So, okay, good enough. Thank you.
So we're getting towards the end here, so we're seeking approval or adoption of the master plan, but what that does for us is it gives us direction to submit the technical drawings in the back with the plan, as we've discussed it here today, to the FAA. The review process on that is anywhere from 3 to 6 months, and then they may identify some things to tweak on the plan. We do that, and then we have a signed airport layout plan that they use for grant funding going forward.
My take on this is I'm in favor of this, and I think you need to submit that before we start pressuring, you know, because we get pressure down from the top, and the FAA's going to say, well, we haven't seen the master plan.
Oh, they've seen it.
Yeah, they have.
But it hasn't been approved by the commissioners. We want to take every
that will help.
Every hurdle out of that, that no, the board's on favor of this, it's all signed, sealed, and there's a big bow on it. FAA's got everything, and when so that they can't, because every excuse, well, I don't have to do my job until you do this. You do this, and then I can go do my job. But it's always something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas, nope, that's all been taken care of. So I'm comfortable, as this commissioner speaking, we haven't voted yet, but or brought it to a public meeting, but I'm very comfortable with this. I've been following along as liaison from the beginning, and I'm very, very comfortable with it. I think it is just about as comprehensive a master plan and easy to understand as anyone I've ever seen. Some of them get really, really out there a ways with acronyms and stuff, and I've noticed that there just isn't a whole bunch of that on here. It lays it out in terms that just I can understand.
Thanks.
And I'm comfortable with it. I think it's a good approach, and I still think we need to really take any obstacle out of the way when we call in the guns, the DeFazios and Merkleys and Wydens and Waldens and stuff, when we call them in, we don't want the FAA to say, but they just haven't. The commissioners haven't even approved this plan. What are you talking about? Let's get that out of the way.
We've had a lot of public comment, a lot of comments from the Planning Advisory Committee, 22 members. All of those comments have been considered. Almost all of them, perhaps all of them, have been incorporated into this final draft.
If they weren't incorporated, they were certainly addressed.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I would ask is that you as a board agree to move this forward toward an official approval, however form that takes.
I don't know how that goes, what that process is, but if it's a motion to bring this forward for approval, I would make that motion. I don't know, you're the statutorial brains here at the what do we do?
I think it goes to a weekly business session, and we approve it, and that would give us the public
tell the story
presentation
the public.
As well, mm-hmm. With our new logo, making it look really sharp. I think the right thing is put it on a weekly business session, coordinating with how soon you guys, I mean, if you're here, if Larry's doing it, but we'll have it on TV, that way it's publicized and we can make that
and this show
unless
very,
you need it in a timeline
well.
Today.
This well, really good.
I will say that next weekly business session, I'm going to be in Salem at the Oregon Airport Management Association and having meetings with U.S. Senator staff and the FAA about this whole
most likely thing, so. The 19th would be the soonest that we would have you on a weekly business session because of it being in the Ambassador versus the 12th. We're in Cape Junction.
Oh, yeah.
And so it'd be appropriate to have it in Ambassador so the presentation can be on PowerPoint.
But I think, and I'll throw this out to the other two commissioners, I think you can take a verbal that this is on the agenda. For approval.
We could even sign off and then just talk about it on that Wednesday.
Whatever is appropriate for what you need.
Sure.
But
it would be great if we could forward this to the FAA and get it going prior to the meeting that we're going to have in Salem.
Can I make a motion that we sign off on this, get it going so we can get it to the FAA, and then we'll ratify it on the 19th at our public meeting on the 19th?
I'll second.
Sounds like a good motion. Further discussion?
Great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd say the same. Thanks, Larry. You've really helped us round a few corners here in Josephine County at our two airports. And,
thank you.
And I can't say enough of you guys.
Kaufman and Precision Approach.
Exactly. Just all the help that you guys offer us. Thank you for being good partners.
Nicely done.
Yep. Yeah, great airport.
It's got potential. Mm-hmm. So,
For
my dad,
all those
in
favor?
License.
Aye.
Is that right?
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So it passes 3-0. And we'll get that
we'll
in
get
your
that
hands
signature
as soon as
for
possible.
You in hand before you leave, so you can have it.
I'll stick around.
You'll have that document. I mean, before you leave, we'll go up your mail.
Okay, yeah.
Good. We don't have enough coffee, and I've got some smokehouse almonds in my car.
My thanks to
you. Take care, guys.
Those who are
thank
coming
you very much. Good seeing both of you.
Taking up all your time. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you.
You sound like me.
All right. Item 2 is Emergency Services Quarterly Update. Sarah Rubin.
Emergency Management Director and staff.
Good morning.
Please
good
join morning. Us.
Oh, it's Wednesday.
Not a lot of chair
over
bumping.
There. Are you not feeling well?
Oh, no, I'm fine. I was just,
floating. I was kind of like, why are you being pushed in the corner?
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Yes, don't jump, Emily. It's only the second floor.
Movie quote, not saying baby.
So, no coronavirus here.
Yeah. I'm going to do, I think we're going to pull up a presentation on the computer.
Can you just confirm that you're going to run through that?
Well, that's the airports. So, I'm sure they don't want to see that one again.
I don't know. It's pretty good.
Is it in mode that you can hit the button now?
No, not quite. I don't know. Let's see.
It keeps clicking back and forth between the two. Can we close that one so it...
I don't know. You came in with guns a-blazing this morning, so...
Yeah.
It seemed like you were ready.
Banana Man.
Active peel.
Sorry, some squirrel.
I'm right here. You don't have to talk about me.
Sorry.
Whisper mode.
You have a solution that you don't know about that she doesn't know to ask about, and I just told her ask you about it because you have a solution.
Well, you have solutions to so many things. You just don't even know.
Complication. Bahamas.
But I don't think that's
Aruba.
And here's
earthquakes.
I'm going to Tahiti in April.
Tahiti? Mm. You need to come see me.
I've
got some places
I know you
need
you
to
do.
Go.
I know. So good morning, everybody. Sarah Webreck, County Emergency Manager. And we are here for our quarterly update. Our quarter is sort of wonky because the normal quarters we report on were off by like a month and a half with you guys. So we always have to go back and remind ourselves what months we're actually reporting on. So what you're going to see today is a report on what we've done the last 3 months, which is November, December, and January. And we've done another Prezi presentation. Hopefully it won't make Commissioner Morgan seasick. She's not going to watch it. We're going to trade off and give different updates each. So I'm going to start off if perhaps. We're going to go through this every time, huh? Hold on.
That frame's not blocking the signal, is it?
There we go. So some of the things that we've been up to this quarter, we had an opportunity, myself and the emergency manager, thanks, Annette, from Douglas County, were able to travel down to California during the fires that they experienced in Sonoma County in conjunction with the public safety power shutoff event that they had. Wayne and I spent 3 days in California. Our first visit was to the California Office of Emergency Services, their main EOC, state EOC there in Sacramento. It was a fantastic learning experience. California was experiencing fires all over the state, and also PG&E turned off much of the power throughout the state. We learned quite a few lessons other than just being exposed to a real well-run state emergency coordination center. What we learned was some tips that will help us as we go through our PSPS events here in Oregon. One of which, as transients to the state of California, Wayne and I found ourselves driving down the freeway with little to no information about where we could stop and get fuel or stay in a hotel, where the power might be on. And if you don't know where the counties are geographically in the state of California, it's hard to go to their county websites and find specific information. So that was an issue that we want to make sure is accounted for here in Oregon when we experience those kinds of events, and make sure that we put information on our state website, like Trip Check, so that people visiting the state of Oregon can see easily where we're having issues and where they can get services. The other thing we were able to do was visit the PG&E Community Resource Center, which Pacific Power has agreed to provide for us here in Southwest Oregon if we have a PSPS event. Learned a lot of lessons, talked to their staff there and their resource centers, and brought all of that information back to Pacific Power. So we're still working through some of that PSPS planning. That'll continue through this winter. We actually have a tabletop exercise in 2 weeks with Pacific Power to go through some of the stuff we've been working on. So
what's PSPS?
Public Safety Power Shutoff. Okay. So if you remember last summer, we found out kind of last minute that Pacific Power was going to implement their fire mitigation plan, which included their intent to potentially turn off power to areas in Southwest Oregon if weather conditions warranted such an action. We responded very quickly and made some plans on how would we react to that, but it was very rushed, and we've been using our time this winter to kind of hone in on some of those plans so that we'll be better prepared this summer to respond to those potential power outages. And then just 2 weeks ago, we had our January winter storm response where we had 18,000 customers of Pacific Power's that were without power. We had many trees and power lines down throughout the county. We've had an after action that occurred last week with first responders as well as 6 representatives from Pacific Power. We had a great conversation about things that went well, things that didn't go well, and some actions that we're going to try to take to improve response and information coordination. So one of those things that we're going to work on is a common operating picture, or using our GIS capabilities to be able to input and share information about where trees are down, roads are closed, and hazards that exist. And that dashboard or that mapping tool could be shared across the 911 center, the Sheriff's Office Communications Center, Pacific Power, Public Works, and all first responders. So we don't currently have a system like that in place. It's a pretty disjointed process for sharing of information. So we're hoping that that tool will help us better share information, therefore making better decisions in future events. So,
well, and we found that some people couldn't get on social media, and I know we rely on that a lot now to get individuals to get the information. And so there, Cave Junction was like, I wish we had a piece of paper somewhere that said what we were to do.
Yeah, trying to get information out to the public is a whole different animal. You know, we try to share information in every format we possibly can. We send press releases so the newspaper will pick it up. We put things on the radio. We share on social media. Yeah. We try every avenue we can to get messages out. And I don't know what the final solution is to that. I don't know if there ever is a perfect solution for sharing information with the public. We just keep trying to hit every avenue so everybody has an opportunity in some form or fashion. I think that we'll be better at sharing more comprehensive, more complete information with people if we can share it amongst ourselves better.
Do you also have like pop-up reader boards like ODOT does where you could put a roadside message?
We do not have any of those. I know that County Public Works has a couple, but with this last event that occurred, the destruction was so widespread.
You put it on azalea drive that there's trees down,
well,
and yet you ignore
the entrance to Cave Junction. Yeah. Could say there is a Red Cross Center at the high school.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a thought.
Yeah, that is a good thought. Assuming that, you know, during this last event, I would venture to guess that not many people were coming all the way into town from Cave Junction and then would be heading back and seeing the VMS boards.
Right.
It is tough because there's, you know, we're so rural, and where do you put those boards that everybody could see?
Good point.
The nice part
you put it out there and the people in Williamsville, where's ours?
The nice part about the Illinois Valley is they're a pretty tight-knit group, and word of mouth gets around quicker than any message on a VMS board typically. So especially when you don't want the message to get out, it gets out faster.
I think, you know, it's all good to get the information and share information and people calling in so we can get all this stuff. People can dial 911 in the middle of the night and get an answering machine. I think there's a big thing needs to be fixed on that side of it.
We're not in charge of 911.
I know you're not in charge of 911, but I mean,
let me be
you know,
clear.
We're honing it. You're honing yours down to a to a science and everything else, but yet from another section, I had somebody break it into my house and I couldn't call anybody. And so that's, you know, I get worried about such things, little things like that, which one's more important. But I do see your, that's not your department.
Not today.
Your arms are only around this much of it.
Yep, we're going to try to perfect the processes that we have control over.
And I thought the snow thing, although it wasn't used a lot, but it was a good exercise. I thought it just clicked, you know, on such short notice. All of a sudden you got warming center here, and I thought just, you know, even though it wasn't used by certain people in the
It wasn't a warming center.
Well, whatever it was.
It was a Red Cross evacuation center.
Whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. I'll be wrong every time I say something, but that's fine. You know what I'm talking about. That building out at the fairgrounds, mm-hmm. the building out up.
Okay. Yep.
But it was a good exercise.
It was.
I think, you know, at least showed the capabilities that, you know, we can, it was like fire drill at the high school.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't get an opportunity to practice what we've been planning for very often. And, you know, we say in emergency preparedness training that one of our biggest challenges is that we don't have enough disasters. because you are always trying to convince somebody they should prepare for something that either they've never seen, don't understand, never experienced before. So smaller events like this give us an opportunity to look at them and say, how can we do better at this for the next one? And this was a fairly small event, not for the people who were out of power for up to 5 days, but in the grand scheme of things, this was much smaller than a Cascadia subductions on earthquake event, right? So these, the tools and tactics that we're learning and improving based on this smaller event will help us in the larger events. So,
and you can't, just like Ricky said, it's tough to walk 10 miles in high heels in the snow.
That's right. That's tough to walk 10 feet
Glad
in high
heels.
That,
Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's tried it just to see.
Wait. Shooters. This is from Ricky.
All right. So now it's Ricky's turn to talk about her wonderful job.
Okay. My wonderful job, of course, is our education and outreach program, which we've kind of called Get Ready Rogue. That's our whole campaign for reaching people. And if this will work, we'll go into the website. So we have had a longstanding RVEM, Rogue Valley Emergency Management website, which allows us to have a dual county website for people to go to because our events are going to be the same in both counties. We have a little, you know, some different circumstances with bridges and things like that, but largely we're going to have the same types of event. So this allowed us to kind of keep things together, especially as we're transitioning into a different county website. We've kind of decided we still want to keep RVEM going because we are having a lot of traffic, which has been wonderful. We've got almost 6,000 people visiting that website a month. So what I love about the websites is you can get all the great statistics to how many clicks are on your site. So we're continuing to build that, allowing for things like requests for presentations to be made online, which is new, easier ways to get a hold of us, and even a recovery tab because new things come up all the time and people want to know, what do I do with this, and what do I do with this, and why are they different? So we're trying to create those different avenues to get people the information they would like to have without having to dig too far. And we've also updated our trainings, which are not just emergency management specific, but all emergencies. So ham radio would be part of that, though we don't conduct the class. PrepU, which has been successful. We'll talk about that in a minute. Search and rescue is another one that we try to get people involved in because that is part of preparedness, is people just understanding how to be involved in the community and to be an asset instead of somebody that's going to be needing to be rescued in that. Lastly, Facebook. On this particular page, we have had obviously 14,700 people reached by our post. This is in the last month, so Facebook does a great job of getting the word out for us. PrepU. So we've had 3 and 4 since we last met. It's become a 7-week training program rather than 6 weeks. It's 14 hours of training for every person that's there, which is fantastic, not to mention what they take home and do. And we do give them assignments. They do have to be building a kit of some kind through the course of the class and writing their plan for their family. Once they get that plan in place, they can kind of move on to a larger view, which is going to be their neighborhood preparedness. So we've been working with them on individual, family, and neighborhood preparedness, and stressing the importance of our individual preparedness being what the county is going to rely on to recover us. We've had excellent feedback from our students. We have lots of emails and videos and things like that for things that they're learning and that they're carrying out, which has been super neat to see.
What's a bob?
What's a bob, yep.
Oh, I'm sorry, a bug out bag. Okay. I didn't write that. Okay, it's a quote. Yeah, it's a bug out bag. So it's not just your go bag that you stick in your car, but it's a little bit longer term. And if you've got to leave your house and you might not be coming back, you're going to have a bug out bag. So I loved that quote because it was from a retired police officer. And I like that we've got people that have been in first responding for their entire career, yet they come to prep you and learn things. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate those students, as well as our people that come in and know absolutely nothing and leave feeling like, I'm not scared about what's going to happen. I feel like I'm making steps toward preparedness. So as an offshoot of Prep U, we ended up having what we called Prep U, what we called a half Prep U, a part-day Prep U. So BLM is putting all of their staff through a Prep U that they are covering. And it's a four-hour class, and we're doing somewhere between 10 and 15 of their staff per time. And it's something that's being handed off. So basically, I've taken the couple guys that had a real interest in carrying this out to all the BLM staff, who is one of them is their, what's Colby? He is their safety
coordinator.
Coordination of the guy up for BLM. He's the one that started this whole thing as a Prep U student, and he took it back to BLM, got another guy involved, and the two of them will take what we do in Prep U and get all of their people prepared so that they are creating their own go kits for their work vehicles even so that they're, when they go out into the wilderness, you know, they drive an hour and a half out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. If we had an event when they're out there, there's no way to get those people back. They're going to be on their own for a long time trying to make their way back. So with that in mind, they wanted to try to educate as many of their folks as possible. And then it has rolled into doing something with ODOT that looks similar. And just yesterday, another company in town, we'll wait to see if that happens, but they are interested in doing the same thing. So finding ways to duplicate our efforts without duplicating our staff. Classes offered, like I said, ham radio, search and rescue. We've done a comprehensive water class and an austere medical class, and they both have been very well attended and very well liked. I didn't ever think about comprehensive water as being something other than being able to drink it, but someone asked me if it was swimming and things like that. So it's not swimming. It's not water safety in that way. It is, you have to be able to purify water beyond what you probably know offhand, unless you've had some training. That's one of our greatest risks after a large scale event is just having clean water.
The Russians have a straw. It's not the pump and the beaker and all that other stuff.
You mean like a life straw?
It's a straw. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can go into a mud puddle and drink out of a mud puddle because the straw takes care of it.
So we do, there is something like that, and it's called Life Straw. And it's all over the world. Lots and lots of people own them. They're great for sticking in a stream if you're up hiking and the water is relatively clean. You're worried about bacteria at that point. Right. If you get down into contaminated water because there are viruses and there are dead animals and people and that type of a thing, then you have viruses to deal with, and those do not filter for things like hepatitis. So that's one of our big drives for people.
Does that pump thing do that?
That pump thing is not a pump thing that we use. That's just a nice picture.
Oh, sounds like someone should take our comprehensive water class.
Dan, you're welcome to come.
Really good.
What they do, though, is they'll have people bring the pumps that they have, because I was one that went out and bought a Life Straw because I heard about them, and I thought, well, that's an easy, convenient way. Only I could still die from some terrible virus. So
I got some Russian straws years and years ago, and I said, yeah, they last forever, and you can use them all the time.
Maybe you didn't. They're great for certain circumstances.
I don't know if I got the Russian Life Straw. I just got the dumb American one.
You got the American knockoff.
American, yeah.
There's a lot of versions out there.
But that's what we help people with. We've had many people come in our classes and say, well, I have a Life Straw, or I have a Berkey or a Sawyer or whatever kind of system. The people that instruct the class, they'll take their systems and they'll show them how they work and tell them what the limitations are. So people aren't buying things that they think are going to save them that are actually going to put them at risk.
I have 100 yards of gravel, and then I just pour water on the top of it, and it'll purify.
That should do it, Dan. I mean, don't quote me on that. But so austere medical is the same kind of idea. It's teaching you things that you wouldn't otherwise know, but you might think you know. So we've had great success with that, and we have lots and lots of people on our wait list to continue going through those classes. Public presentations, that's the list of people that I've presented to recently. We've had 700 people in attendance at those classes. A couple of the cool ones were the Grants Pass High School. I met with 333 of their students and was met with almost zero recognition of what should happen after an emergency. In fact, some of them said they should go back inside and continue working. So they've only done drills, unfortunately. So the question has to be asked at some point, what do you do beyond the drill? Because it isn't go back inside and work, and it isn't stand in the field in 30 degrees in the rain. There has to be a different plan in place for those kids. So that was eye-opening for them and the teachers. And I've been asked to come back to do all of the incoming freshmen year after year. So when we get that opportunity to get into those kids and at least start them at freshman level thinking about preparedness and kind of normalizing it and making it something different than the prepper show that they watch.
And along with that, you're hoping that the kids go home and tell their parents.
Yes.
Because if mom is
back in the room,
just say, hey, mom.
And that has happened. Yeah.
Yes.
Let me share my straw with you.
Right. Now, don't drink it if. Yes, so that's absolutely the case. And I do try to, you know, even reminding parents that your kids are not, they shouldn't be protected from knowing these things because they are life-saving. Kids are capable of so much more than we really give them credit for. And Tilly Smith is one of those little girls that saved a bunch of people when there was a tsunami because she knew what was happening when the water went away and they cleared the beach and she saved like 100 people that way. So the second one that was really cool was St. Anne's Catholic Church, and the reason was they have a large Hispanic population. And through coordinating with them, I have a meeting set up and a translator to do our first presentation to the Latino community. So I really liked getting into that one. I think we mentioned, well, I don't know if it was you guys or not, but the Rural Metro other one that I did was, it was great, but it was an eye-opening experience for us and them in that our first responders aren't necessarily personally prepared. They're ready to go out and do their job, but they're not personally prepared. So,
or their family's at home, right. So they don't have to worry about them.
Right. Yeah,
their
if you don't know what's happening at home.
To leave and go help somebody else when your family,
right. Family
yes.
needs help.
Yes. Yeah. So that was our introduction to first responders needing to be a focus or a target for presentations so that they begin to understand our threats locally and understand that people are expecting them to be superheroes in that situation. It's an unrealistic expectation, but it's an expectation nonetheless. So go kits. We've had just 12 of the one person, 37 of the two person in this last quarter. But what I like is all those people that have gone through our PrepU classes, they're building their own kits, and they're building something beyond Go Kits into the larger, more robust kits. And lastly, our public presentations or public events. Some of those were the public safety fair, lots of people coming into the Grants Pass Home Depot parking lot for that one. Got
cute
stuff
babies.
Going. Yeah, I don't even know that baby. But we were on the radio out in Ivy, and we did a smile event at the high school or the elementary school out there, which is what the pictures are from. So we're able to get out into the farther reaching areas. In fact, we've even talked about trying to find a way to host a PrepU, and we have some people that are willing to take that on out in Ivy since a lot of people have expressed interest. But getting out there to do that 7 weeks in a row with everybody that needs to go with us and our instructors, that's a lot to do, so the CERT folks out there have mentioned it a couple of times, so we're working on taking care of those people.
I've been out to the Kilma a couple of times, and you can go out there and learn something from those people because they really are in survival mode daily. You know?
Right, it's a different way of
living. It's a different
living.
World out there. Yeah.
Can Emily back that up?
Yeah.
Emily's very capable, and I think that's why.
It'd be nice to have her living next
capable.
Door somewhere.
Right?
Yeah.
There's plenty of outhouses next to her we've heard about, and they all sit next to each other with no separation. All right, there you go. With that, Emily.
I think I get the next one.
Yeah,
okay.
She's going to take it.
All right. So some of the planning projects that aren't nearly as sexy as what Ricky does, stuff that we've been working pretty hard on is wrapping up the continuity of operations planning for the county and the city. We're in our real final push. We've been at this for just about a year now. Some departments have been rock stars, and some departments have not been rock stars when it comes to continuity of operations planning. We have our exercise planned in 2 weeks. Where we'll have a joint exercise with city and county department heads, and we will have the contractor come from Bold Planning, and he will facilitate an exercise for all of us to go through our continuity of operations plans. Once that's completed, we'll make any changes needed to the plans, and then we will present the continuity of government plan to the commissioners for approval and adoption. I've been working on county communications coordination with city and county, as well as outside agency participants, working on awareness level orientation to what our countywide communications infrastructure looks like, and where we plan on going as far as the future of our communications infrastructure.
Can I ask, where are we with the county's participation in the COOP planning? How are you doing with departments' responses? I know you were working with the city, and how's the county's response?
It's mixed, but we are...
Nice, sugarcoat.
Okay, can I borrow that?
Yeah. You recorded that
we're
really
paying
well.
A consultant to help us get through this process, and we have timelines for when we're paying for this consultant. Is the county on track to meet that timeline?
Yes, we will meet the bare minimum with some last minute catch-ups. We will get there. We established an 80% baseline goal to get every department to an 80% completion of their foundation by the COOP exercise.
How do we compare to the city?
You know, it's not about comparison. You know,
you're trying to be very polite.
Boy, she is good.
Be honest.
I would rather
this is your opportunity to be honest.
She needs to be in the bakery business.
Inwardly.
Okay, so is the city got theirs at a different level than we do?
There's a different feeling of motivation. There's a different level of energy. There's a perception of it being a useful tool, which helps with motivation, whereas here it's not felt like a useful tool. The general attitude seems to be that it's an unnecessary put upon that we've created to kind of burden their time, which is unfortunate. And it may be not until some COOP events happen
in practice
that
it'll take care of itself.
So, commissioners, what do you think we could do to encourage motivation? Because
well,
we're paying
good examples, because I've done nothing so far.
It's
and I live in the city.
Well, it's not us individually. It's the department heads.
I know, but
working with. And so, how do we encourage the department heads to make a priority of something we're paying for?
I think all you can do is ask. There's no other.
Well, that's
easy
not,
tool in the toolbox.
There is. They work for us. We could say it's our priority, and we'd ask them to have it be their priority. And then maybe it would be motivated.
Well, I might click it up a notch.
Something to consider, that right. If we said, please make a priority of your COOP.
I think.
Well, and we need them during an event. And so that same problem of them their family being ready and them being comfortable.
You know, there's also been some feedback more on the county side that we're not going to follow this anyways. It's not going to be a useful tool. So, again, I think part of that is going to be experiences, and we're going to have to take the lead in helping them exercise something that they have built in a real event, guiding them back to, okay, this is what you're experiencing. What did your COOP say a year ago? Oh, we didn't address that.
And
so
I tried that during the power outage. The animal shelter was without power, and I got a phone call, and I said, well, this should be super easy. What's your COOP say you're going to do when your building doesn't have power? We didn't address power outages in the... Well, this is a good example as to why power outage would be included in your continuity of operations planning. If you lose power, you have to figure out how to maintain your functions. As it sits right now, even with the county department plans at 80%, they're not good plans. They're very, very minimal. They've put something in each section.
Threw something together to
it's true
get
to
the
make
dog,
us shut
the dog off
really.
The porch.
There are some exceptions.
There are some exceptions, but for the most part,
who are the exceptions?
I don't want
we'll just, no. I'd like to know who's done a good job.
Well. Let's talk about that.
Separately. I think that might become evident at the.
But I think it.
Do you realize we're about to have? Sorry, go ahead.
I think it's true. Commissioner Morgan says we can go in and demand this.
I'm not asking to demand.
Now,
I'm encouraging.
Just a minute. They work for us, and we can go in and tell them it has to be done. Or you can try to. How do we as an organization make it worth their while to do that? In other words, how do you generate the excitement?
Yeah, right.
How do you get it? How do you do? Do you have an exercise and just say, you know,
we'll go
the Navy was big on drills, you know.
There is a drill coming.
You are in after steering and you don't have electricity. What are you going to do now? Gosh, I don't have a clue.
You've
got to know how to wire around it or whatever. But how do you make it exciting for them? How do you make it real for them? Because they really don't think it's real or that it can happen until it does happen.
I also want to.
Then you're without.
Since we're being fairly frank, because I think hopefully it will be useful, I think on this city side, and partly because they're smaller, there's a sense of pride and teamwork, and I'm not alone. On the county, it's sort of, I think for so many years, it's been sort of scrabble and fight, and I feel alone and disjointed, and there's a lot of feeling like, well, things hit the fan, I'm going to figure it out. Because that's what we've done
in
the past.
We've been in survival mode.
I'm going to figure it out. And we can afford to not be in that sort of desperation mode and a feeling of, like, many units of isolation.
What if we made it a competition?
Can we put together, like, a roadmap? If you're in public works, and, you know, we're all in public works. In public works, yeah, I got my COP's just fine. But how does another organization depend on public works? You see what I'm saying? How is everybody connected? You bring a good point that I'm going to do mine, and hey, I don't care about you. I don't care less
and
about
is,
these people over there.
True,
we're all an organization.
You impact others.
And I think that it's important for department heads to know that it's important to you. Now, we're having this exercise in 2 weeks. How many of the three of you are going?
I don't know. Is it on our calendar?
Lily is going.
You've responded. I think it's important for all of you to participate. If
that's a good way to do it.
If it's not important to the three of you, it's not going to be important to them.
And also, it will help you as commissioners understand the purpose of it and see it in action.
So
even
it's
though
on
it's
Friday
a table,
the 21st.
Mm-hmm. It's a tabletop discussion, but it will give you maybe a little deeper view.
Is there time after the tabletop? I'm not trying to say let's demand our authority, let's insist on our authority, but I do think there is something that if it came from us, that it is a motivation that is important for us as a county function. How do we even identify what's essential services? If we said that no matter what, hell or high water, you have to get to your job, and they get here and they say, my role is this, was I really essential function? This is where we can identify those essential functions that have to be here.
That's what the plan does, too.
But if each department at the city, Aaron also suggested this was important, and those department heads in response made it important, and that it grew a teamwork for them to work together. They will be able to bring 100% of their departments ready with COOPs to this exercise in 2 weeks. The county is going to come empty-handed because we do not have our COOPs done. And so I know they do blood drives and say, hey, city versus county, who's going to bring in more blood donors or who's going to bleed? You know, there's different competitions or something. But here, if we don't make it a priority, they're not going to make it a priority. And so that's part of how do we say, you know what, we don't want to just be in survival mode. We know we are going to, but this is part of us identifying.
Maybe it should be just something at the manager's meeting, at the monthly manager's meeting, you just ask for a report.
But they've asked that every month. They've asked in personal meetings and phone calls, and they're getting rebuffed.
Update your quarterly update, have them come in and update you on their quarter and their coop. And they have to go to something.
One of the things we've talked about, so just so you know, after the exercise, we've said for both city and county, we're going to consider the coop process to be closed out because we need to move on to other things. We will have reached the foundational baseline that we need. Yes?
If I could just make a real easy solution, I think I'm one of the departments that are not to 80%. I did communicate, said, hey, I'm not to 80%. Can you send me some stuff?
You're working on it.
what I think the department managers would motivate us, and I'm saying this as one of the naughty children, have the board request, and by request I mean you're going to give it to me. Give me your update on what percentage you're at by this date and tell all the departments that's what you need. I guarantee if my boss says, I want your update by this date, I'm not going to give you an update that I'm at 20%. I'm like, oh crap, I got to get this done.
So it's ready, yeah. And then.
And it's not saying.
Homework.
Do it now, rah rah. But basically it is.
And we're going to be at the tabletop. Would you. And we look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah.
Or something.
Smooth.
Well, we've hoped that that would be motivation. We understand that we're not the boss of JJ. Mm-hmm. We try to gently encourage and cheerlead and offer assistance. Clearly, and I appreciate the fact that you spoke up because I certainly wasn't going to call you out. However, it's good perspective in that we can give him deadlines, but they mean nothing. It means that he's going to get another phone call from Emily. What we were hoping was by having the three of you come to the exercise, there would be some accountability, and JJ wouldn't want you to see that his plan was at 20% at the exercise.
It won't.
Whatever.
My concern is that we're closing out the coop, and people are going to get there and go, skip it and not show up, and then we're not able to get it done when we need it done.
So where we're at is everyone will be to that fictional 80%. Baseline of foundational building.
Is this because you're killing yourself to get it done and not doing it?
I'm not killing myself, but it's a significant lift of my time, which is another reason why I'm excited to close it out. You will get the roll-up for the continuity of government plan. Sarah will explain where its deficiencies are. We'll move on to other things. My thought and Sarah's thought is once a year, we will circle back to all the department heads and say, okay, last year, this is where we left it. These are the things you could focus on and improve this year, and you'll have a month to do it. And that's where we could use commissioner support is, okay, make that a priority to make it on an annual basis a living, breathing check-in so that we are not just, whew, we got through it, we got to this baseline, and then it has never improved.
And we have a consultant right now, which we won't have in the future. So that opportunity to have help and to have extra hands-on, I almost wonder, Chair, if on behalf of the board, you would be willing to send out an email to the department heads asking that they give us a report on where they are. We're looking forward to the tabletop and seeing if we can show up the city with how prepared we are, and maybe a report back. I don't want us doing half quality work. I want us to put our best foot forward because it will help us be able to grab that in an emergency when our power's out and our computers aren't working, that we have this plan. We can say, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is who I'm supposed to contact. This is what's that next step.
Yep. I think with Annette's help, I could get there.
Mm-hmm. Two real quick things. So first,
what do you think? About an email? Okay.
I wanted to remind this board, because it wasn't the current, the board when I was hired, but throughout my interview process when I came back from Jackson County, this continuity of operations planning was the number one request for me to accomplish as soon as I got hired. We started the project, like I said, a year ago, and this was a number one priority of the Board of County Commissioners when I was hired. So I just wanted to circle back around. I know that as the board changes, priorities change, but this was started because of that reason.
And that letter ought to reflect back that it was the number one thing for the board.
This contractor.
Your charge from that board was to the COOP.
Yes. The contractor was actually paid for in 2016. And was on hold while we didn't have an emergency manager and the transition was happening. So I picked up the project when I got here and took that contractor work and have tried to get it to where we have a decent continuity of operations plan. The other thing I wanted to point out is I'm sure that you have all been following Tillamook County and their IT issues. That is a perfect COOP event. So if you can take a real-world scenario, not a massive earthquake that is unrealistic for some to grasp, but something that is like the Tillamook event that has just occurred, those folks are still without full functionality of their electronic system.
And what's the cost of rebuilding your entire electronic system?
Well, at least that one you still have lights and heat.
Too. Yes, you have lights and heat, but you don't have
access
to anything that we rely upon to do our essential functions.
And this machine continues to move on and on and on, yes. But you have no documentation or how it's going to do that tomorrow.
Dave Yamamoto, Commissioner Yamamoto, called me and asked for something. He said, but don't email it to me. We don't have it.
Yeah.
I know, right? You know, I had to send it to AOC.
By Pony Express,
no, I sent it to Susan Morgan with AOC. But, I mean, they literally have no email.
No. So that is a perfect example of an event.
I'm fine with that.
You don't have email anyway.
That's my problem.
So, anyway, I appreciate the discussion. It's been a sensitive issue. I never want to call out fellow department heads ever. Don't ever want anybody to feel like if you don't do this, I'm going to tell mom and dad.
I just think we just need to remind them that it was very important for the board
a
year ago, and it hasn't slipped. It hasn't slipped down to three or four. It's still there. We just need to bring it back to the top from the board, and that letter can
Highest priority, our deadline's the 21st. Could you give me an update of where you are?
Yeah.
So
let's strive to get this done, because we're going to have a showdown with the city of Grants Pass at this tabletop.
And I'm very against making this a cousin against cousin, brother against sister, sibling rivalry, because there are some city departments that also just barely...
That's fine.
Good. We'll look good.
That's their problem.
No, I'm not looking at calling them out.
We're not. We just
they need to know that
I just
we
don't
care.
Want to be embarrassed in the room, because it started over here, and then all gung-ho, they seem to have picked up the excitement, and we haven't.
We had to prove to them to go into contract with
us. Yes, and then we don't follow
through. You remember that. You were on the other side of what am I bidding for this?
Oh, and we got to have this. Mayor.
This is one of those projects that we said is a value.
Yeah, to both of us.
They took it serious.
Yeah.
It is. And I think
we beat this one down.
We're not ready.
And on a positive note, quietly, Sarah can share those who have been rock stars on the county side so that they can get commendation from their liaisons quietly. But we don't like to, good or bad, it's not healthy to point out fingers. No. So.
And I think, you know,
there are some who did great.
There's also,
I like kudos.
but I would, if you could get us that list, because I've got a list of liaison to the, tell me if I've got a department, I pick the phone up and say, hey, you know, I'm just going through what, you know, some of the things that we think we've left hanging. Yeah. How are you coming on your show?
And that'll back up that email if we had that.
Every
liaison.
Time we have,
yeah, I think, you know, that they got to know that somebody's watching the gate.
Every time we have gotten to the point where we're like, we need to show them this list, we went, let's give them one more. Let's see if they'll take
I think we're there.
We've been trying super hard.
Well, we're down to under 2 weeks, so I want to say let's come alongside so you're not alone.
Yeah. So you'll see in a couple slides from now, we're going to wrap up the coop planning project just in time for us to start another project, which will need your help spearheading the cheerleading. So some of the other stuff that we've been working on, participation in the fire district committee. We did get the updated integrated fire plan completed and signed. Continue to work on the PSPS with Pacific Power. I've been part of the transportation safety planning project with Public Works. We've been working with the State Office of Emergency Management on the Be 2 Weeks Ready campaign. The governor has given us all direction that we need to get 250,000 residents in the state 2 weeks ready. We are doing our part, probably a lot quicker than most other counties. Thank you to the commissioners giving us Ricky full-time, which has also happened this last quarter. And as a side note to that, you know, when we were in here before asking for Ricky to go from 20 hours to 40 hours, we said we had tons of requests and 20 hours was just never going to cut it. I believe that she could probably work 160 hours a week and still not fulfill all of the requests that are out there. The more momentum that's happening.
But it sounds like she's got that addressed with, like, your BLM people, that you've got two BLM people.
Finding a way around.
You're trying to get your disciples to go out.
Yes, that's the ultimate goal.
What's that?
Biblical analogy?
It was on purpose,
I think disciples.
Yes. Strategic.
And honestly, That is key. It's not just us talking about why do I want to be prepared, but Dan, how are you doing in your thing?
Don't ask Dan.
No, but hey, can we have that person talk to so-and-so, and it's that word of mouth.
I'm prepared. I put all my
eggs in one basket.
I put all my efforts into precious metals.
Okay.
Brass right. and copper and lead.
Great. Oh boy. Perfect. So moving right along. So we've been working on
it's a different kind of problem solving. Anywho,
an updated Everbridge two-county policy templates for emergency notifications and data updates to the system. It's one of those things that's been hovering around, been needed to be done, and just it's one of those things that I just had to lock myself in a room and get done. Now we're at the point where trying to figure out the process. If we create a two-county policy for a system, what do we do with it next? So I'm going to consult with county legal and figure out how to make that a policy. But
that name Everbridge keeps popping up. Is the city and the county both use Everbridge? Or is it just us? And is it just part of Josephine County uses Everbridge? It doesn't reach to all rooms in the county. Where do we stand on it? We brought that up at the court security thing. Everbridge, I went. Wait a minute, does it go all over?
So Everbridge is the two-county system that includes, we have an internal notification system, which is what we use to let people know that the county was still open, right, for the snow days. And we have added, we can add anybody to that internal notification system. So we've added the 4-H office as well as the courts to that notification system. We can add anybody in the world to that internal notification system, so it can reach anywhere we want it to.
Cave Junction City Council, City Manager.
If we want them to be notified for different things, we can absolutely add them to that list. It does. Our internal notification system includes every single county employee. Michelle enters them as they come on. We send them a test in their new employee orientation so that they know what it looks like. That process is getting a lot better. The other part of the Everbridge system is Citizen Alert, which is shared between Jackson and Josephine County, which includes all 911 phone data, so all landlines in the counties, white and yellow pages, as well as the citizen opt-ins. So when we tell people sign up for Citizen Alert, they log in, they tell us how they want to be notified, whether it's by cell phone, email, text message. They decide how they want to be notified, and every agency in both counties can and does use that system.
Do we include, there's a whole bunch of people that sit around all day watching television. Hmm. Do we include our TV stations, broadcasting areas to where, you know, I'm sitting there watching Days of Our Lives, you know, and all of a sudden, click, it comes on and says, you know, the dam broke.
Yes. So
you have exactly 2.5 hours to get the heck out of here and to higher ground. It'd come across the TV set, but no, it's going to come across my phone. Well, my phone, my wife's phone, they buzz constantly. And if I got up and answered that or had it in my lap, I'd never get to watch Days of Our Lives. So I know I leave it on the counter.
That's a drawback.
But, huh?
That'd be so sad. You have that problem too? Watch Days of Our Lives. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So what about Jason? What's he going to do there?
I am the alerting authority for Josephine County for the emergency alert system. So I have all the credentials from FEMA to send the wireless emergency alerts, like the Amber alerts that come on your phone and make noises whether you want them to or not, as well as the emergency alert system that has the wonks on your phone. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system.
Like the TV does.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So through our Everbridge system, I can send those types of alerts to your TV, to your radio, to your phone, all of the above.
Nice.
So the part that I was just talking about, the Everbridge policy templates and data updates, that's the piece that has never been written that explains when and how, and the templates put into the system in order to activate that. I can activate it at any time, but I never had the written policy for how it was going to be done.
Well, I see, every once in a while you'll see, especially from Medford, it'll say, you know, shots fired at the corner of Fir and Maple in Medford. Please avoid this area. But it's just a little streamer across the bottom.
That is done by the local TV station.
But can we have something different than that? That little streamer.
We will have something different than that.
Every once in a while, somebody will look at it and go, boy, did you see that? Yeah. And I go, what? I just saw Jason leave the room.
What it should do is, you know, the colored rainbow screen? It'll flash up on your screen, and it'll show like the bars, the colored bars, and have the emergency alert.
The lineup.
Okay. Yeah.
Just so you know, we would not be activating that for shots fired.
No.
No, huh? No. But I mean, if the dam broke.
Yeah.
I'm talking about
that. Would be a good example.
Lost Creek dam breaks.
We have longer than 2.5 hours, but yes, we would actually use that system for that.
Yeah.
Where did you get that?
I can show you the map.
Okay.
Promise. Anyway, so that is where, huh?
I'm interested.
I'm interested to show you.
Okay.
Anything you show interest in, I'd be happy to share with you. So that is part of that Everbridge policy that that has now been written. We just need to go through the process of adopting it or whatever that looks like. Okay. And then now we're also starting planning for Cascadia Rising Part 2 exercise in 2022. So
that's not us. That's the state.
The state is going to have we had it in 2016, Cascadia Rising exercise. It will happen again in 2022. We will participate with the state, the rest of the state, for that exercise. So we are beginning that process.
It's actually going to be a 5-state exercise. So.
And we are so excited.
That's why they're planning now.
It starts out as a 5-state exercise, and after Cascadia, it's a 2-state exercise.
Right. Yeah. 2.5.
Josephine County did not participate in the exercise in 2016, so we are anxious and excited to participate this time.
So I know our side discussion ran us long, so I'm just going to highlight a few fun things. Training drills and exercise are ongoing, so if we look at exercising with employees and partners, some of these you may have heard about, some not. We were invited to... If you just look at number 2, for example, we were invited by the National Weather Service to go over to their Medford facility and be evaluators and participants in a process in which they were training their new meteorologists to be deployable. They had a process of certification that they had to go through in order to go deploy to be meteorologists for, fire camps, for example. And they are a very important partner for us, so that was a pretty cool unique opportunity. We had a lot of nervous young meteorologists in front of us. They did, planning reports and situational reports, and they had scenarios that they had to forecast to us, and then we got to throw in inserts and all sorts of... It was good. It was really interesting and useful. Of course, the hospital did their big MCI. That was earlier, just before this quarter. But there was some follow-up that we did with them on the after-action review and some other follow-ups for us on that. City of Grants Pass had their COOP exercise. It was a mini version of what we're all going to be doing on February 21st, or some of us will be doing on February 21st. So that was just internally with their department heads.
I got a question there. When you did the city's COOP, did they come away from that and say, this is a little more important than I thought it was? Is that what we're anticipating for the counties, or is it a joint we've got coming up in?
It's a joint. They want a second one.
Because if we had a Josephine County
tabletop exercise, we talked about that. We didn't think it would be effective.
Okay.
So
it'll be your first and their second.
But did they get it after the first exercise? After the one for them? Is that when they said,
they got it before that.
They did, okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
I
was just wondering if that's the element we're missing on our end of it, that we didn't do... A county?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we would have been ready even until now. And in truth, since we're operating at the county level, if we have a large scale event that's involving the whole county, likely the city's involved. So it's important to get used to integrating our continuity of operation plans.
Well, I think if we did have a county wide event. Where are most of your resources? Where's your food? Where's your water treatment plant? Where's your, it's here. Where's your hospitals? Here.
You want them to be prepared.
You want them to be probably a little bit more even stable than the guy living out in Cape Junction.
Well, and city citizens are just going to be more reliant on their government than county. Because they rely on them for everything. Water.
Every day.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they don't have any individual systems. No. So.
And so, although it is county-hosted exercise, the majority of the folks there are going to be county. City's there as an integral and expected partner for any kind of county-wide event. And then we participated in an RCC tabletop recently where they talked about an active assailant on campus and had a lot of good, important questions for us and vice versa about how that process would work. It was something new for them as well. So good stuff there.
I did a thing out there at RCC a couple of years ago. It was about Cascadia. Mm-hmm. And they had it was a class that they had out there, and I was supposed to be role-playing as the mayor. And it was a city employee, and she said, would you be my mayor? I said, yeah, I'll be your mayor. Well, it was really interesting.
Fun.
Because each group, they had, I think it was 26 minutes. You knew, you know, the shake alert said, hey, this thing, we've got a grumbling over in the stomach's growling in Bly, Oregon, and you're really going to get it this time. Mm-hmm. And they had 26 minutes to respond, and how would they do that? It was pretty cool.
Fun.
But, you know, one of them was just, hey, open the stores. Open the doors to the stores and just let them get looted because that's what they're going to do anyway. But at least you would, the food that's there wouldn't be trapped. Everybody would get, because this is a last-minute deal. Profits out the window. You know, let's get as many people fed and with water as we possibly can. I'm just open the door and let it happen. That was one of their options, which I thought.
Interesting tactic.
You know, if it was okay with Albertsons and Safeway and whatnot to do that, hey, step back. Let it happen.
Yeah, we'll be moving towards some business discussions on that in the future. But Ricky and I have a long ways to go before we're as awesome and amazing as Sarah. So we have a lot of training,
amen.
Yeah. Certifications, things we need to check out for the state and federal level in terms of certifications as well as the local preparedness. So we've been doing a lot of ICS and FEMA type. Trainings, so that's ongoing kind of in the background.
Multi-departments have actually been talking about ICS training, mm-hmm. and that's one of our EMS board conversations as well. So
ICS?
Incident Command System.
Thank you. Okay.
We have a role in that. There's a training for our level as well, just so you know, on the ICS system. But all the emergency response, any disaster, it's Incident Command, and so...
required.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, more fun stuff to come on that. And then we hosted two regional trainings as well that other counties came to. Ugh, it doesn't. There we go. Wee.
Okay.
Doesn't want to. Just got to find the right angle there. And then just real quick, you can read those for yourselves, but we just wanted to remind you of the partnership building that's ongoing. Some of it's been established for a while. Some of them are new partner opportunities, and then some other new pop-up fun stuff, the UCAN shelter coordination. We got our Spire large capacity generator got delivered this week. I almost put up pictures of it, but...
Didn't you already have one?
Hmm?
Didn't you already have a generator?
It was a surprise. Yay! So we have a new, it's deployable to anywhere in the state, as well as regionally.
So like trailer.
What is high capacity to you?
125 kW.
Oh my goodness. That is high capacity.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
What do they do? Do you buy a.
No, this was that Spire grant.
You have to buy a fuel truck, too.
It
was though, this. Right?
Something
burns through the fuel.
Sounds to me like that's turbine number 8 from Bonneville.
Correct. So it is meant to really power an entire block. City block
that's
it could
huge.
Easily take the capacity of.
Yeah.
It could handle...
or a camping trip.
The construction zone of a New York skyscraper. That's really...
that's huge.
An entire military troop camp.
But is it diesel?
Yes.
It is diesel.
Right? So, yeah, you need a fuel truck.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we asked for one of those.
Yeah.
We did not get that one.
I mean, you burn through a load of fuel in a day.
That's just about big enough to handle charging all of Commissioner Morgan's
electronic devices.
Nice. I see he kind of...
We're going to get back to that 100 kW.
So, point of that being, there are these occasional pop-up things that occur. We will be reaching out to our large capacity partners, like the hospital, the wastewater treatment plant, other places that might be appropriate for that level of kW
draw.
The
city has a big generator truck that they bought for the water treatment plant. They also have a well over here that they can use.
Correct. So this potentially
And I know the hospital's got backup generators.
Okay. Correct. They all
have
them.
Backup.
This would be the backup to their backup. That's how this would work.
Okay.
It's hard to use this kind of a generator because most facilities don't have a way to receive that kind of power.
They don't have the infrastructure.
But that being said, it's much cheaper to wire to receive that kind of power than to do that and buy one of those generators.
You can prepare by putting the conveyance in.
Because you can't plug that generator in.
No.
They don't make a plug big enough to be like this.
True.
Correct. And so I think it's important to know, because although it's cool and it was a grant gift, there's work we're going to have to do to even make it functional.
Right.
In an event.
Let's also make sure that we have adequate vehicles to tow it.
Yes. Things that are free are not always free. In order to tow it, they didn't send any equipment, any hitch.
A pickup would do it, but I mean, you got to make sure you've got the right hitch on it.
Yes, we've learned that they sent it with nothing to make it operational, so we're working on that list as we speak, actually this morning. And I have a truck that will be my duty rig that should be here by the end of the week. It's a Ford F-250. It should be capable of pulling that easily. If not, we have
four-wheel drive.
Yeah, we have complete access to all of the search and rescue vehicles, which include
there's two trucks there,
450s, 350s.
So. And some of them have the clamshell.
This is the pin type. Yeah,
we're going to convert it though. Anyways, all those things aside, so there's
free things aren't always free.
Sarah participated in the interviews and hiring process of the new Illinois Valley Fire Chief. He's come on board, and we're starting to build a relationship with him. He's a really crucial partner. They come and backfill a lot for city and county events.
What's the FEP employee training?
Yeah, so that's the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Coordinator. The FEP program is a grant-funded position through the Oregon Health Authority, and you're nodding.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah. They're stationed with Public Health.
Changed it so they work with you guys more closely now. That position.
So we share some time with her because her duties intersect with some work that we do, but she is housed in Public Health and sits under Mike Weber. So we've been participating with that position a little bit. So we can move on. You get the gist there. If I can.
And
Sarah will close it out for us.
Okay. So some next quarter goals. Obviously, we've talked a lot about PSPS.
Sign language.
PSPS, finalize the continuity of operations planning. I have a contract in county legal right now being reviewed to hire a contractor to help us with the emergency operations plan update. It has not been completely rewritten since 2012, and a lot has changed since then. Through this update, we are going to completely rewrite the county plan, and instead of the city having their very own massive plan with a bunch of words that don't actually relate to any of their function, we're going to make them an addendum that specifies their authorities and responsibilities to our plan. We will make that opportunity available to the city of Cave Junction. However, they have not yet taken advantage of our outreach. That is on the horizon. That will be a large project, updating the emergency operations plan, working on fuel distribution planning, and the common operating picture, like I explained, that we were working on from our after action from the Pacific Power event that we just had. And then also working quickly to make up for lost time with AllCare. We met with them for several hours yesterday and have numerous meetings already scheduled with their staff to figure out how to utilize them as a real solid community partner. So training and exercise, stuff that's coming up. Emily and Ricky are going, and Claire actually are going next week to a class on the coast to learn about how to operate an emergency operations center. We have the county and City Coop X that we've talked about ad nauseum this morning. And then the BCC Council Emergency Declaration Training, which Commissioner Fowler has asked for, as well as the City Council. We'll do that at the joint meeting. I'll make a presentation. We can follow up with any individual conversations you'd like after that. PSPS Tabletop is coming in 2 weeks. And then all three of us are leaving in March for the Oregon Prepared Conference in Sun River. So some other real quick things to mention that you'll be hearing about. We're still working with Jackson County on hiring a fire plan coordinator. This will be a joint coordinator that will work on maintaining and updating the two-county fire plan. It will likely end up being an employee of Jackson County, and we will have an agreement and pay for our share of that employee out of Title III funding. We've got some grant purchases to make on grants that we've been successful in obtaining. Obviously, the Fire District Committee is ongoing. Everbridge improvements are ongoing. And we are updating our Family Emergency Preparedness Handbooks, the shiny, glossy books that Ricky hands out everywhere she goes. It's time for a full rewrite of that. We've been working with Jackson County on that rewrite. We're going to completely redo the book and update it and reprint it. We have a grant to pay for that. And then in our budget this year, we had asked for funding to purchase AEDs for county departments, and we've been working with Amber DeLay at Public Health and Claire now as the FEP coordinator to write a policy on county AEDs, and we will be purchasing those AEDs prior to the end of fiscal year.
Thank you.
Sorry, that
nice
was so long.
Nice race for the finish line.
Very good. Report. Thank you, all three of you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Excellent.
Thank you, guys.
Nope, good to see you.
Only issue I have is that I don't have the ability to do the rest of the agenda. I'm wondering if we have ability to continue it to a different time this afternoon, maybe? Continue it to the 3 o'clock meeting, or...
I was certainly just going to boot number 3. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Okay.
We have the utmost confidence in you.
I want to let me know your schedule for Prep U. I'd like to take one of those courses. I took the Public Safety Academy.
Oh, okay.
Enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, no, it would be
so
great.
I think it would. Yeah, let me know what your class schedule is.
Okay, May, June sometime will be our next one.
May, June?
You mean like now at 11?
It'll be sometime, yeah.
Okay.
Because we'll finish in
I have just, a couple minutes, but honestly, okay. If there's a way to send this to this afternoon's meeting or something like that.
This afternoon doesn't look like it's going to be really...
The 3 o'clock.
The 3 o'clock?
And just
I'd be really sorry, Sandy. Hope you still have coffee left.
I ran out a while ago.
I'm good with that, Commissioner DeYoung.
Move this to. You want to move 3?
No, just 5, 6, and 7. Five and six, really. 3, we're going to boot to next week.
Is the 6 o'clock? I'm sorry, is.
3 o'clock.
Is the 6, item 6, a long one?
No, it's just zeroing in on a date and time.
Right.
I asked for an explanation of the time clock program.
Right.
And I think that's what that is.
Right.
That's fine. We just have to be intentional on these meetings to be aware that when airports and emergency management both are never going to be half an hour presentations, ever.
No, and it's not their fault.
No.
Well, this was I think the airports one was drawn out because we did have that master plan thing.
I think it was
easy,
vital.
I
just think that we have to be mindful that we can't schedule a lot of other stuff with them when this happens. Okay, so state of the county, I would just recommend look at dates in June and I can email.
Propose a couple.
Correct. That would be the easiest thing with that. We heard back that that's...
We just want to get back with dates.
Do you have a preference on a specific weekday? Last year it was done on a Thursday. We're coming in, towards the closing of budget season in June, too, so I need to be...
Thursday afternoons tend to be good.
Okay.
Yep.
That misses everything.
We don't have a bunch of other meetings anymore. We used to have general discussions on Thursday afternoons, so some of this other stuff can plug in on a Thursday afternoon. We don't anymore. But
I'll find a date and bring it back.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, then I'm going to adjourn this meeting at 11:03. One more thing.
If there is items that need to be moved, we would need to continue them so that we can bring them up without it being
about an adjournment.
So instead of adjourning, continue to the 3 o'clock meeting or after legal counsel at 2
discussions.
O'clock.
Mm-hmm. So let's just pause in our agenda. We'll pick up with item 5 this afternoon at 3.
Okay. Thank you.
Item 4.
Huh?
Item 4, tabled to next week.
Yeah, that one's already tabled on mine.
Oh, not on mine.
Sorry, yep.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Also, I invited Meadow Martell to this afternoon's 2 o'clock, so she'll be here. I didn't want to do too much more back and forth. Let's sit in the room.
I think that's great.
All right, then let's end at 11:04.
Okay.